Hello and welcome to Swiss Info's programme for January 31st. I'm Claire O'Dea. This week we're looking back to a time when a large proportion of the Swiss population lived in poverty and many vulnerable children suffered in a crowded and underfunded care system. The fate of those children has cast a shadow over Swiss society and has recently led to international headlines about Switzerland's slave children. I've covered aspects of this evolving news story over the past few years, viewed through the prism of the 21st century. In this programme, I'd like to get closer to the realities of the day, to try to figure out why some children just didn't count. It's hard to imagine a more vulnerable child than the newborn baby Roland Begert in 1937. Roland represented everything that the society of the time found morally repugnant. It was a society still influenced by theories of eugenics that believed children carried the perceived failures of their parents. Roland's father was an alcoholic and a drifter, described in the parlance of the day as work shy, a serious charge that could lead to internment without trial. His father deserted his mother before Roland's birth. The mother was a young woman from a gypsy background, an ethnic group known as Jenisch, who were seen as a problem underclass by the Swiss authorities. Taken from her own mother as a child and raised in an institution and as a farm servant, she was poor and uneducated. 3 weeks after Roland's birth, she gave up the new baby and his older brother, not yet 2 years old.
Also, hier muss ich sagen,
she had absolutely no other choice. Firstly, she had no money. She hadn't trained in anything. She had no financial means of her own. And later I realized that my mother had a very weak character, very passive, and this would not have made for a happy upbringing. I'm convinced of that. But it was difficult to reconstruct things in the past.
Roland was sent to a Roman Catholic children's home in Canton Solothurn, where he spent the first 12 years of his life. He was one of 280 children in the care of about 25 nuns. The premises is still being used as a children's home. Today, there are 80 children living there in the care of 170 personnel. With so many children to care for and a disciplinarian ethos, there was never any warmth or affection that Roland can remember. He was a bedwetter, which meant frequent punishments, and one of the few Protestant children in the home, which added to his sense of isolation. Roland suffered sexual abuse at the hands of the older boys, which he took to be a normal part of growing up.
Das hat große Buben gehabt.
There were some older boys who returned to stay in between foster placements. They introduced us to the world of sexuality, and not in a nice or enjoyable way. And the sisters were aware of this to some extent, but they had no idea how to deal with it.
At the age of 12, Roland was sent away to live with a farming family. This happened without warning. I asked him how the relationship was with his foster family.
It was somehow neutral. There was no affection, but there was respect. I respected them. Not out of fear, but I quickly felt that they were hard-working people who also had to struggle to survive. You have to remember that this farming family also got 30 francs a month for me, and at the same time, they had cheap labour. That was how it was then.
Und gleichzeitig haben sie dann eine billige Arbeitskraft gehabt. Das war die Regel.
In recent years, the issue of the exploitation of former foster children as farm labourers has been brought to public attention by victims demanding justice and recognition. Their cause is now firmly on the political agenda. The question many people inside Switzerland and abroad are asking is, how did Swiss society get it so wrong? The answer lies in the economic realities and moral climate of the day. Historian Loretta Selias has researched how the communes intervened to assist poor families. Supporting these families was an enormous financial and organisational challenge. Rather than make welfare payments, the standard response was for one or more children to be removed from the family home and placed either in an institution or with a farming family.
Swiss society was convinced that these children needed to learn how to work. So it was an educational reason why they were being placed in places where they could learn how to work through work in order to be able to support themselves as adults and not having to come back to the communities for support.
The communes, and not the state, were responsible for social welfare. Poor communes with low tax revenue only provided financial support to families as a last resort. It was also a last resort for families because it meant social exclusion.
The minute you got support from a community, that meant you faced restrictions, such as losing certain rights, for example, the right to vote. So if parents placed their children before being on welfare meant they did less experience social exclusion and were at the same time able to have a certain amount of control over the placement of these children.
Parallel to the officially organised placements, families on the breadline all over Switzerland made their own arrangements to get by. In 1952, in a small village in Canton Fribourg, 10-year-old Christine was placed by her parents for 2 years with a neighbour whose wife was ill. I asked Christine how this came about.
Der Herr Zbinden ist zu uns zu meinen Eltern gekommen und hat gefragt.
The man came to my parents and asked if they would have a girl who could come and help his wife, keep her company, because she had psychiatric problems and he was sometimes away for 2 or 3 days at a time. He spoke to my parents and they said I could come, because by then my older sister was 15 and had already left home to work. So they sent me.
Das ist schon gewesen zum Arbeiten gehen, oder? Und dann hat man mich geschickt, oder?
I asked Christine, did she not want to stay at home?
Ja, schon, aber ich habe einfach das Gefühl gehabt.
Well, yes, but I realized that money was tight for my parents and I knew that they would be glad in a way. Well, I don't mean glad, but that they would appreciate it if there was one less mouth to feed.
Dass ein weniger am Tisch ist, oder, zum Essen.
Christine continued to attend school and was well treated during her time with the other family. After 2.5 years, she returned home and for the following 2 years spent only the summers away working. All arrangements that were made privately by her parents, in the expectation that children would pay their way from a young age. It was a way of life that would soon disappear. When the authorities placed children, contact with the parents was discouraged. Often it was practically impossible for parents to visit or keep track of their children's welfare.
The difference was these children were being placed with people they usually didn't know, and the control and supervision was still in the 1950s, not as good as the law wanted it to be. That meant that the possibility to burden these children with dangerous work, with work harder than they could bear, also abuse, physical or sexual abuse, psychological abuse, these possibilities were just higher because nobody really looked after these children. And it was the state or the authorities who actually had the responsibility for these children and in a lot of cases did not live up to it.
There were different names for these children working on farms, the most well-known German one being Verdingkind. It's hard to translate this term, but the historian Gianna Virginia Weber, who wrote a paper on the definition of Verdingkind, favours the English translation indentured child servant. By the end of the Second World War, the law had changed to define children placed with other families as foster children. The families were paid for the children's upkeep. Legally and on paper, there was no such thing as a Verdingkind. In reality, it took decades for the exploitation and the stigma to end.
And that was due to how society, first of all, looked at these children. They usually had a stigma being poor was a stigma, being born out of wedlock was a stigma, if the parents were not able to support you because they were having an alcohol problem or psychological problems, these stigmas from the parents usually were put on the children.
Roland spent 4 years with the farming family, shouldering a large work burden outside school hours. In the community, he was referred to as a verdinkind, and that is how he thought of himself. It was normal for him to be called a lazy lump or a good-for-nothing.
Whole families were destroyed, torn apart. My mother was also torn away from her parents. And the same thing happened 24 years later with me and my brother.
Despite his good progress in school and his teacher's wish to send him on to secondary school, there was no hope of further education. The local poverty inspector ruled that out. Roland was enrolled in an apprenticeship as a foundry worker at the age of 16. Hellish years of hard labour, as he remembers, where until the age of 22 he was only paid pocket money from his earnings by his boarding house landlady, as arranged by his legal guardian.
I never felt that I was part of society at all. No one helped pave the way into society. The way was obstructed.
After a health crisis, Roland did eventually find the resources within himself to break away from a life of drudgery. He changed jobs, started night school, and turned his life around, eventually qualifying as an economics teacher. In 2008, he published his memoir, Many Years an Outsider. Roland was reunited with his mother and brother in later life and was able to tell his mother's story in his book too.
Of course, when I work through these memories, there are things that upset me still. But overall, I can say that I have no anger against any particular person, because I always saw how the social mechanisms of that time worked, and also the poverty. There was just no money available.
Remarkably forgiving about his own past, Roland believes that the experiences of children in the system varied from negative to positive. His brother was loved and kindly treated by his foster parents. The trouble was, it came down to luck. Swiss society is now going through a process of atonement for past wrongs committed against children in care. Many victims have come forward in the media to tell their painful stories, stories which have shattered national nostalgia for the good old days. The issue has emotional resonance because it's about children in need, mistreated children, Switzerland's slave children, as described in international headlines. A 2011 feature film about child labourers treated abominably on a farm in the 1950s was a box office hit. There has been a government apology, an expert group was set up by the Justice Ministry, and Parliament is due to discuss putting its recommendations into law this year. In the meantime, campaigners for compensation have collected enough signatures for a referendum. The conditions for so many children to be let down so badly don't exist anymore in Switzerland, and not just because of increased prosperity. New, kinder ideas have emerged about children's welfare, upbringing and education. If anything can be learned from the experience of the past, it is that child protection is worth fighting for.
Das ist für mich die Tragik.
That is the tragedy for me. The whole tragedy lies in the fact that these children had no protection. We never had the feeling there was a protecting hand over us. That is what still upsets me.
Roland Begert, child of 1930s Switzerland. Thank you for listening to the Swiss Info programme. If you're interested in finding out more about this issue, have a look at the in-depth section on our website, swissinfo.ch. I'm Claire O'Dea.